I was in Flatbush last Shabbos in connection with the Shabbos Project and Project Inspire. And I spoke in one of the shuls. And after I spoke, a balabos came over to me and asked me, "Can I ask you a personal question?" I said, "Go ahead." He says, "Are you nervous before you get up to speak?" And I said, "Well, it really depends. It depends on a lot of things. Am I nervous before I say shir in the morning? No, because I've been doing it for almost 40 years, kind of. Am I nervous when I get up in front of a small shul in Flatbush and speak to 150 balabatim? No, I'm usually not nervous. Guess what? I'm nervous." So why am I nervous? I'm nervous because I've been speaking to an enormous crowd. I'm nervous because this is being broadcast to many sites over the United States. When you speak in front of thousands of people, you get a few butterflies. But the real reason I'm nervous is when I have to give an important speech and I have to be matzliach in what I say. So that's a pressure, and that makes me nervous that I'll be successful. And this is an important speech. I'm not trying to be over dramatic, but I want to say to you today that you here today in Chol Mokim Shehein, you are the future of Klal Yisrael. And that's not an overstatement, and I'm not trying to be melodramatic. Because one day, Mirtz Hashem, you'll all be the wives and mothers of Klal Yisrael. You're the next generation. And as you may think that that's far off in the future, and the thought of marriage hasn't even crossed your mind, even though I doubt that. But it's not so far away. And when a bacher comes to me in yeshiva, I teach guys who are about 20 to 22 years old. Bacher comes to me and sits down and says, "Rebbe, should I start going out?" So I say to him, "Well, are you prepared to go in 3 months from now to be a balabos with a wife and to worry about all that a person has to worry about? Because that's all it takes." And for many of you, Mirtz Hashem, within a year or two or three, you'll be wives, and Mitzvah Hashem after that, shortly thereafter, you'll be mothers. So therefore, this is an important speech, because I'm speaking to the future of Klal Yisrael. And I sometimes wonder if a person would step off a desert island, and he had been out of communication since, let's say, the year 2000, and he came back in our society today, What would surprise him the most? What would amaze him the most about how society has changed? Now, mind you, the person is not coming back from the 1950s. He was part of society. He knows what the internet is. He knows what fax machines are, and he knows basically the technology that is existent today. But I think the thing that would amaze him most is how ubiquitous and common cell phones have become, and particularly how attached are to our cell phones. I do not think it's overstatement or hyperbole to say that cell phones is the greatest change that has happened in our generation. The most fundamental change in our generation is the ubiquitousness and how common and how attached we are to our cell phones. You know, during the summer, Din Asman, when I don't have to teach in yeshiva, so my wife and I try to walk in the morning. But Baltimore being Baltimore, it's hot, it's humid, I do not like the heat of the humidity. So we go to a mall. It's a four-story mall, a very popular mall. We go there about 9:15, 9:30 in the morning. There are four floors, about 10 minutes per floor. So we walk for 40 minutes in more or less air-conditioned comfort. The mall hasn't opened yet. The mall opens at 10 a.m., so it's still very quiet. All you have is a bunch of old people who are trying to exercise. And I ask myself, to my wife, what are we doing here? We're not old. But the mall hasn't opened. It's very quiet, except for one store. There's one store in the mall in which people are lined up at 9:45 in the morning before anything is opened. You know what store that is? That's the Apple store. It's as though people cannot be without their cell phones for even a few minutes. Matter of fact, they did an experiment, and they've come up with the following statistics. The average person looks at his cell phone every 6.5 minutes. Other research has shown that people are uncomfortable if they're left alone without their cell phones. Actually, they did an experiment, and they put a group of people in a room without their cell phones, without any books, and they said, you have to be alone for 15 minutes. But before they began, they asked the people that if you get bored, you will be able to administer to yourself electric shocks. Are any of you think that you'll come to the situation that you'll be so bored that you'll administer to yourself electric shocks? And to a person, they all said, no, there's no way in the world that we're going to electroshock ourselves. And guess what? After about 7 minutes being alone, without a cell phone, without anything else, they were so bored that they electric shocked themselves. Because as you all know, it's the worst thing in the world to be bored. And therefore, it's better to suffer pain than to be bored. But I want to tell you something. It's good to be bored every once in a while. Because it gives people a chance to think. And that's probably what's wrong with most of American society. They haven't thought. They can't think anymore. But we're not American society. And we have to think. We have to think about life. We have to think about what's going on. We have to think about our family. We have to think about Eretz Yisrael. We have to be able to think about so many things. So every once in a while, it's good to be bored. But I'm not here to talk to you about being bored. You know, this is a sea change in society. A sea change is an expression when society has totally changed. And sea changes usually take years to happen. But what's happened to American society with cell phones did not take years to happen. I want to read to you a synopsis or a couple paragraphs, a couple lines from an article that appeared written by a fellow named Major John Spencer. He was a major of the United States Army, graduate of West Point. And he had a sobering thought. You know, in the military, there's an expression called band of brothers. That's soldiers when the same unit who are together, they form such close bonds that they are called a band of brothers. They are the same unit. They fight together. They eat together. They sleep together. They cry together. And sometimes they kill together. And as a result of that, they become like brothers. They trust each other with their lives. They have to come on to each other to save their lives. He was a commander in Iraq in two tours of duty, once in 2003, once in 2008. That's a span of 5 years. And what he reports is that in that little time, they went from a band of brothers to what he calls a band of tweeters. Which means in 2003, there were no cell phones, there was no Facebook, there was none of that. And they formed such close bonds together that they were a band of brothers. In 2008, they all had cell phones, they all had the internet, they all had Facebook. And as a result of that, they weren't any longer a band of brothers. As a matter of fact, when they would go out to fight, there would be dissension and arguments between them. Because they weren't into each other anymore. That's what's happened to American society. The only reason we're not amazed, why aren't we amazed? Why don't we look around and say, my gosh, what's happened to America? The answer is, And this is a very important principle in life, that we can get used to anything. Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, the great Mir Rashi Zatzal, has a shmuz in which he talks about something called the Midas HaHistaglus. Histaglus means mistagel, means to become too accustomed to something. And he writes and he says over there that without histaglus, without the ability to get used to things, we couldn't exist. But on the other hand, it's not good to get used to everything. You know, there was a time that you're sitting at a chuppah and a cell phone goes off and you're shocked. Don't you have a courtesy to shut your cell phone off? There was a time that people would be in shul and some guy's cell phone goes off and everybody looks askance and says, what's wrong with you? And now you can't be almost anywhere that a cell phone doesn't go off and it doesn't faze us. Because we've gotten used to it. And there's some things you shouldn't get used to. You know, in another shmuz, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz talks about the story of the burial of Yaakov Avinu. They go up to bury Yaakov Avinu, and who shows up at the Maris HaMachpelah? None other than Esav. And Esav says to the sons of Yaakov, I'm sorry, this is my plot, this is my kever. They say, no, I'm sorry. You sold it to Yaakov. Remember, that was part of the Bechair. You sold it. So Esav says, okay, show me the bill of sale. Prove it to me. They say, well, sorry, the bill of sale is in Mitzrayim. So go get it. So go from the Maris HaMachpelah, which is in Hebron, all the way back to Mitzrayim. Who's going to do that? They say, Naftali. Naftali Ayala Shlucha. Naftali is very quick. He's going to run to Mitzrayim and he's going to get this bill of sale. Meanwhile, this is all going on, and Yaakov Avinu is lying there. All of a sudden, someone named Hushim ben Dun. Dun had one son who was deaf. And he's not here. He doesn't hear the whole Bikuach. He doesn't hear the whole Masa Matan. He doesn't hear the whole discussion. All of a sudden, he pops up and he says, what is going on over here? Avi Abba Lunav Bisoy? The Zayda Lichtar? The Zayda is lying there? And you guys are schmoozing? So they cue him in. So what does he do? He takes a bat or a stick or something and he knocks the ace over the head and he decapitates him. He cuts off his head. What about the 11 other brothers? How could they tolerate this Bizoyin HaMeis, the Bizoyin of coveting Yaakov Avinu? The answer is because they were part of the discussion and they became used to the idea that he was sitting there and he was lying there. Yai Hushim was deaf. He doesn't know what's going on. All I know is what I see in front of my eyes. Which proves the point. You can get used to anything. And that's what happened to us. We've got used to anything, almost anything. And that's the way it is with fashion, with behavior. That's the way it is. You know, this problem that this officer from West Point pointed out, this doesn't only affect the army, it affects yeshivas as well. I have a friend that I knew, Mamisah, almost 50 years ago, that's now a mashgiach in a Baal Tshuva yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And he tells me, and he writes, and he says, you can't do the same things that you did 10, 20, 30 years ago. The boys are just harder to reach. This is what he writes. The boys became uninterested in anything besides instant gratification. They're just interested in their screens. I once asked a boy, do you ever discuss a problem with your friend over Facebook? He answers, I don't want to hear their problems. I just want to know what's going on. Another Rebbe, who works with boys at risk, says, I will take any boy into my yeshiva. I don't care about his background. I don't care whether he chas v'shalom has been on drugs. I don't care whether he's been engaged in activities that no friendly yid should engage in. There's only one condition: I take him into my yeshiva. No cell phone. Because if they have a cell phone, I can't reach him. I can't talk to him. If I can't talk to him, I don't want him in the yeshiva. A fellow came over to me not long ago. He says he has had a son and a daughter in Eretz Yisrael. The daughter was in seminary, The son was in yeshiva. The daughter had a mediocre average year in seminary. Nothing that really inspired her. And her son, on the other hand, had a tremendous year. Was matzliach, had an aliyah, turned himself around. He says, what's the difference? Because the girls' seminary allowed cell phones and the boys' yeshiva said no cell phones. You know, this sugi of cell phones, this is not a Jewish problem alone. This is a societal problem. It affects the entire society of not only of America, but the entire world. You know, in preparing this drasha, I read a book. The name of the book is called Reclaiming Conversation. It was written by a woman named Sherry Turkle, or Turkel. She's a professor of social sciences at MIT. MIT is Massachusetts Institute of Technology. For those of you who don't know, what Harvard is to liberal arts, MIT is to technology. So she wrote a book called Reclaiming Conversation. And the thesis of the book, the sum of the book, is that the preoccupation with cell phones is damaging our humanity. Humanity means you become less of a human being because of cell phones. Here are several quotes from the book. Face-to-face conversation is the most human and humanizing thing that we do. It is where we develop the capacity for empathy. Empathy means sympathy. Empathy means to be nice about mechaveri. Empathy means that I'm able to go ahead and to relate to your problems. You do not do that with texting. You do that with face-to-face conversation. You do that with looking the person in the eyes and seeing their pain or seeing their sorrow. And it's damaging our humanity. This is not frumerade. This is something that they say in Shmuz and Yeshiva. This is a professor from MIT. It's damaging our humanity. And statistics back her up. After all, she is a professor. And she has oodles and oodles of statistics. Employers report that today's job seekers who grew up on smartphones and cell phones don't know how to begin and end a conversation. Do you know what it means not to be able to have a conversation? They have trouble making eye contact. They have a hard time communicating. A full social worker told me that her daughters sit at the Shabbos table and they don't know how to participate because they don't know how to have conversations anymore because they're so obsessed with texting. Then the author asks the following question. Are we depriving them of the skills that are crucial in friendship, in love, and in work? And I have a better question. Communication is the basis of every marriage. Listen to me. Communication is the basis of every marriage. Every marriage, no matter how good a marriage, how wonderful each person is, every marriage has differences. And husbands and wives have to work out those differences. And the way you work out those differences is by talking to each other. And if you become diminished in your ability to speak to somebody, you will not have a successful marriage. Chas v'shalom. And I therefore ask all of you, all of you here together, and all the people, b'chol mekom she'hem, do you want to engage in an activity that is going to hurt your ability to have a successful marriage? I do not think that there's one person in this vast hall that will say, no, I'll take my chances. And if you think marriage is far off from you, parenting must be seen to you as far away as Mars. But you're going to be the mothers of the next generation, of your generation. And in Beit Hashem, all of you one day will be mothers. And you'll raise children. You'll raise your own children. Dr. Turkle says, children have grown up expecting parents and caretakers to be only half there. Parents are constantly texting at breakfast, at dinner, at the playground. Go to a playground. Look at the caretakers, the parents, whoever, the babysitters, whoever it may be. What are they doing there? Are they paying attention to the kids? There's a kid in Baltimore that came over to me. He has a long white beard, but he's an artist. He's not a rav. He has children in Edmonton, Alberta. So he goes there for Pesach. During Pesach, he takes his grandchildren, his 8 o'clock, to the playground. And he's there and he plays with his grandchildren. And the other mothers, wherever they are sitting there, and they're on their cell phones, they're looking, whatever, who knows what they're looking at. So he says, the Goyish kids in Edmonton came over to him and called him Zaidi. And he turns to one of the mothers there sitting with her children there in Edmonton and says, you know, you have a treasure in this playground. The woman says to him, what's that? Where's the treasure? Your kid's the treasure. Another fellow, modern Orthodox fellow from Bergenfield, New Jersey, came over to me after the speech and he says, last month saw you Shabbos. It was a month ago. Last month saw you Shabbos. I took my son to play this hockey game. He's in a hockey league. And he tells his son that for the first time in 15 years, he left his house without a cell phone. You know what his kid told him? He said, Daddy, maybe now you'll watch me play. I can give the shoes 1,000 times, but nothing hit home to this guy like that statement from his own child, maybe Daddy, you'll watch me play. It was like a punch to his gut. I know someone who last Wednesday took her 9-year-old son, a sweet child, to the bus to be picked up in the morning. On Wednesday morning, this person makes up her shopping list. She makes it up on the cell phone, not the old-fashioned way, on a piece of paper. I mean, that's prehistoric. So she takes the 9-year-old boy, hand in hand, they walk to the bus. And she says to him, you know, Yaakov, one day you're going to get married. And I'm not going to take you to the bus anymore. And he says to her, in all innocence and tenderness, he says, Mommy, you don't want to take me to the bus. You'd rather be home drinking coffee and on your cell phone. Now the mother was doing the most innocent thing in the world. She was making up a shopping list for Shabbos. But the kid doesn't know that. The kid thinks, who knows where she is? That's what you have to be careful of. Our children aren't mind readers. You always must be so careful of the image that you will present to your children. I know you're not married yet. Nobody here among you based out girls has children, so I hope not. But one day you're going to be mothers. And let me tell you the lessons now, because I've been through the wars. You know the story of Yosef HaTzadik in Mitzrayim. and how he was tempted by the wife of Potiphar, and he was about to succumb to be over the Aveira. Says the Gemara Masechta Sota, Ba'isa Shah Basa De Yutna Shalavi Veniras Alei B'Chalayim. You know what stopped Yaakov of Yosef HaTzadik from committing that Aveira? Says the Gemara, an image of his father Yaakov Avinu appeared to him in the window. And he said, I can't do it to my father. But that concept, the Musdyuknoi means the image of a parent. And that's what we always have to be careful about, the image that we present and how we appear to our children. You know, I always felt that the following story is a modern-day version of that Gemara of the Musdyuknoi Shalaviv. There was a Jew who left Europe when he was a little boy. His father saw their handwriting on the wall. He wanted to get him out of Europe. He put him on a train to Germany. From Germany, he went to England, what was called the Kinder Transport. From England, he went, though it was then Palestine, which is today Eretz Israel, all alone in the world. And he grew up all by himself. And he became an Erlich of Frumma Yid. He was in charge of the Beis HaKnesses HaGadol in Petach Tikva. And he raised sons who became Talmidei Chachamim. Someone once asked him, what's your secret? How did you remain frum? You were a child alone in the world, no parents, no brothers, no siblings, no support system. How did you remain frum? And he says, I'll tell you why. Because I'll never forget that morning that my father and I sat there in the train station in Austria. And we didn't say much to each other then. But the train finally pulled up, and my father put me on the train. And he told me the words, Zaya Guti Yid, which means remain a good Jew. And as the train slowly pulled out of the train station, my father started walking after the train, saying, Zaya Guti Yid! Zaya Guti Yid! And the train picked up speed, and my father started running and running faster and faster, Zaya Guti Yid! Zaya Guti Yid! Until finally my father tripped, and he sprawled on all fours in front of the train station, and he said the words, Zaya Guti Yid! That's how I did it. That's how I remained frum. Because that was the demus yuchnoi of his father. That was the demus yuchnoi of his parents. The image that he presented his child. But the most frightening statement I read in that book was a comment that her friend made to her. And the friend said, she referred to her cell phone as my little God. Can you imagine that? This little machine, this is my tiny God. But that's what happens. That could happen to a person. God controls the world. Her cell phone controlled her. It was the God. Now, this reminds me of a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, where the Gemara says that when Gideon Yerubbaal destroyed all the Avodah Zarah of his times, all the idols, people were desperate to go ahead and create their own idols. So they went ahead and they fashioned idols in the face of in the form of a fly. And they would put it in their pockets because this way Gideon couldn't get to them. It says the Gemara, they would take out their Avodah Zarah, their little getzkalach, v'hayu mechavto minashka. They would kiss it and hug it. That's what that woman said. I assume that all of you this morning said Birchas HaShachar. I assume that all of you this morning said the Bracha Shalayasani Ovid. You didn't make me into a slave. Let me ask you a question. Is there slavery in the United States? Lincoln abolished slavery on January 1st, 1863. There's no slavery. There's no slavery in most of the world. Shalayasani Ovid, that's an outdated Bracha. There are no slaves today. Slavery is illegal. What does it mean, Shalayasani Ovid? You know what it means? And the next time you make this bracha, you should think about this. Shalayasani Ovid, I'm not a slave to my cell phone. I don't have to watch it every 6.5 minutes. I can live without it. I can sit without it. I can be without it. All of us here today, we're descendants of Yaakov Avinu. The Umas HaOlam, at least a great part of them, are descendants of Esav. You know what the difference between Esav and Yaakov is? There's only one pasuk in the Torah that tells us the difference between Yaakov and Esav. Vayigdlu hanahorim, vayi Esav ish yedei atzayin, ish sodeh, v'yaakov ish tom yeshei v'yaholim. Esav was called an Is, the Deatzayin Isoda. The Targum on that pasuk says Isoda means Gvar Nachshirchon. Now, what does that word Gvar Nachshirchon mean? Rabbi Yerucham Yevovitz, one of the Shmuz and Shtol Tzuatesis in Bavit Kama, that Gvar Nachshirchon means a fun-loving person who involves himself in idle activities. Let me ask you a question. How do you say the word fun in Yiddish? No such word. My shviger Olah Shalom, my mother-in-law Olah Shalom, used to say fun? What's it fun? How do you say the word fun in Lashon Kodesh? Not modern Hebrew, but Lashon Kodesh. The answer is there is no such word. Because there's no need for it. Esav seeks fun. Now listen, all fun and all work and no play make dull and John a dull boy. I like to have fun once in a while also. But that should be the pursuit of life. You know, if Asa was alive today, you know what he would be doing? He'd be playing Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go, for those of you who may not know, is the stupid game which I cannot imagine, in which there is an imaginary figure that's stuck on different places and different walls and different buildings, and people go around chasing this imaginary thing. For what? For what? There's a fellow in Baltimore, Maryland, who slammed into a police car because he was looking for Pokemon. That is Gvar Nachshirchon. That's what the Targum means. Like any other area of Yiddishkeit, we must make gedorim and siyogim like everything else, because precisely because it is so enticing and so addicting. So here are my suggestions, practical lemaisa. Write these down. Remember these. If you were contemplating getting a smartphone, forget about it. 2-3 weeks ago, a bachur my shir. Now my bachur, I told you, are around age 20, plus or minus. He says, Rebbe, I'm thinking of getting a smartphone. I said, why do you need it? Alter began to lonely to be silent. It's too addicting. It's too big of a Yetzirah. You can get by with it. We all need this. Was darf man das haben? And I want to tell you more. A CEO, the CEO is a chief executive officer who lives by his computer. He's in marketing. He says he walked into the Verizon store after he heard the schmooze, and he said, I want to turn my smartphone in for a flip phone. And the guy said to him, he said, you know, you're living in the past. And you know what he told him? I want to live in the past. Now this is a guy that has to be connected a lot of part, a great part of the day. And the inconvenience of only being able to conduct business on your computer in your home or office is a very big inconvenience. But he gave it up. I know a group of Spartan here in Flatbush that they got together, whole chevra, they do have smartphones, but they said when they go into their houses, they leave them in the car, and they only have flip phones, and the calls are transferred to the flip phone because they do not want to bring that into the house. Because it's too obsessive, it's too compulsive. And if you do have a regular flip phone, cell phone, so I want you to keep a log of how many times a day you check it. And you'd be surprised. Maybe even shocked. And if you do have a cell phone, do not go to sleep with your phone in your room. I know of a girl who got mono. And her mother couldn't figure out why. She was up 2 to 3 in the morning every morning with her phone. And perhaps, may I be so bold to suggest and to encourage that if you have a phone, a regular phone, stop texting. Be mekabel not to text. Is that for many of you an act of mesiras nefesh? Maybe. But you know what I'm asking you? I'm asking you to be meiser nefesh. And we all have the capability to be meiser nefesh. It's in our blood. It's in our DNA. Especially if you're a Jewish woman, which you all are. You know, this past summer, I was part of a group that went to Lita in Poland, Lithuania in Poland. Lithuania was the home of some of the greatest yeshivas that have ever existed in this world. Ponovich, Tells, Slobodka, Kelm. We saw what once was the great yeshivas. Ponovich is now a cafe and a bakery. We walked inside the building that was once Tells. It's a churban, literally. Other than the four walls that still are there, It's rubble. You didn't watch your step, you trip on the bricks and the plaster. It's falling off the ceiling and the walls. I spoke there in Tells. I told the people the story of the last days of Tells. On July 15, 1941, corresponding to the 20th day of Tammuz, the Nazis wiped out the entire yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva, the Talmidim, there were 342 Bachurim in that yeshiva, together with Gedolei Yisrael, Reb Zalman Bloch, and other Rosh Yeshivas. They were machine gunned down on July 15, 1941. On the seventh day of Elul, the women and the children were rounded up, and they all knew that they would be killed. I'll listen to this story. Rebbetzin Luba Bloch, who was the wife of Reb Zalman Bloch, who was a reshiva. She was the mother of Rebbetzin Gifter. Rebbetzin Gifter is a woman who was married to Rav Gifter of Mordechai Gifter, who was the Tells reshiva in America. A woman that still lives to this day, Knaim Harbor. She was marched together with her children, and they dug this mass grave, and they knew that they would all soon be killed. She approached one of the Nazi murderers and struck a deal. What was the deal? If he would grant her one last request, she would tell him the place in which she hid her jewelry. That's the deal. Kill me last. Kill me before. Kill me after you kill my children. Why did she want that? What she did was an act of incredible love of a Jewish mother and Mesiras Nefesh for mitzvahs. When her children were shot and fell into the pit, she lowered herself into the pit, closed the eyes of her children, scooped up handfuls of dirt, and covered her children. She looked up to Shamayim and she said, "Thank you, Ribbono Shel Olam, for giving a Yiddish mama the opportunity to bring her children to Kever Yisrael, a Jewish burial." And then they shot her. No one is asking you to do that. Yes, I know it's hard to give something that you may be attached to. But we all come from a line of people that are capable of doing hard things. And so should you. And I hope you do. Goodbye and thank you.
This speech is provided by Smart Choices. For the Smart Choices hotline or to order CDs, call 732-400-9003.